All right, everyone, welcome to the latest episode of Liberty Land. I am your host, Big John, joined as always. You can't keep this guy down. He had some technical issues, and he still managed to come through. We've jury-rigged something in his location just so he could purposely come and join us for this week's edition of Liberty Lens. I'm speaking of none other than Mr. Mike Termott, of course. Mike, how goes it, despite the technical difficulties?
Your audience knows nothing of my technical difficulties, so thank you for bringing it up. No, there is no mountain high enough to keep me from joining you today for this this edition of Liberty Lens. We have some important things to talk about because there are others saying unimportant things about important subjects.
Yes, yes. And that seems to be a running theme the last couple of weeks. Okay. But let's get to it because there's a lot of stuff we need to cover. The first and foremost, I want to start
Is this going to be another 60-minute, 40-minute episode? I don't know if your audience is aware that that when we agreed to do these podcasts on a weekly basis, these were supposed to be 40 minutes each. And I think we're averaging around, 57 minutes or something. So I am committed to helping you deliver a 40-minute program today.
Okay.
I think we might fail, but I am committed to helping you hit that mark. We'll see how we do.
Yes, an Austrian economist and a philosophical Greek, that is a recipe made for brevity, Mike, as we all know.
Okay. Yeah, we're in trouble. All right, go.
Let's go. Okay, so Tulsi Gabbard, Director of National Intelligence, has, over the last week now, has made some startling accusations. The supposed uncovery of serious declassified information, which furthers her claims of a treasonous conspiracy, and I'm using quotes here, a treasonous conspiracy orchestrated by former President Barack Obama and key members of his administration, including John Brennan, the former CIA director, James Clapper, the former director of national intelligence, and James Comey, the former FBI director. And this all swirls around what has been commonly referred to as Russiagate, the Russia hoax. The claims that, to some extent, Russia interfered in the 2016 election. Now, these are, on some level, this has been a political matter for several years since 2016. But to some other extent, this is the first time administration officials have directly accused prior administration officials, in the case of Barack Obama and his administration, of treasonous conspiracy. And I want to put a pin in the use of the word treasonous, Mike, because that's clearly different than illegal, or it's a different level of, as opposed to illegal or politically unwise. So before we continue, talk to me about this initial salvo that we got from Tulsi Gabbard.
Well, thank you. There's any number of issues there to unpack. You did put a pin in treason. I don't know if that means you want to talk about it first. I think there are two very superficial issues that you've already brought up that are, just because they're superficial doesn't mean that they're completely unimportant. One is that this comes at the same time as declassified information. Mm. It is not a coincidence that the reference for criminal prosecution is coming at the same time as the declassification. They're going hand in hand. Indeed, I am convinced that the referral itself is part of a PR play, that the reason for the referral is a political motivation. Mm. And it is a sort of a two-pronged political move. One is to declassify and thereby release information, and the other is the criminal referral itself. It's something that would not hold up in a criminal court. As a matter of fact, I would worry on behalf of the administration, not on behalf of President Obama, but I would worry on behalf of the administration that they would not be able to secure a grand jury indictment, which, as you know, and as every attorney knows, is not a high bar to clear. But I don't think the administration's case, I don't think that DNI Gabbard's case would clear that very low bar, and we can get to that. The other issue is the extent to which this can be accurately characterized as treason, even taking the administration's version of the facts as given, which we don't. But even if you suppose the facts as they describe them, it's still not treasonous, even if you believed it were illegal. To your point, treason is different than other crimes. It is the only crime that is described, the only crime I know of anyway, that's described explicitly in the Constitution. And the reason for that, I think a lot of people have learned this week, looking back at the history, the reason for that is not because the Founding Fathers viewed treason as such a huge threat that they wanted to describe it and therefore get it into court more often, but rather they feared the threat of being threatened with the accusation of treason. They recognized that in the past, governments, recent past in their case, governments had overused the idea that people who cast aspersions on the government, people who did things to undermine the government's intentions, programs, agenda, were treasonous. This is not something that in a democracy you should tolerate, right? The accusation just willy-nilly blanket style that if you did something the government didn't like, that you could be prosecuted for treason. This is the reason why it's described in the Constitution, to make it difficult, not to make it easy. In the case of Gabbard's accusation, the accusation is that Obama ordered an investigation that he should not have ordered. And from that investigation, there was information that was leaked and eventually came to light through legitimate means that might, well, according to Gabbard, did undermine the legitimacy of the Trump presidency.
Right. So when you look at this, though, it's kind of interesting because I don't know that, at least for the stuff that she's made public and declassified and released to the public, I don't know that there's anything in there we haven't seen or heard of before, right? Because just to run, let's run down a quick history, Mike. I'm not going to go into great detail because, like you said, we're trying to get it under 3 hours today.
We have already been through this.
Right.
And I don't mean you and I mean every American has been through all of this material already.
We had the Mueller investigation in 2019, which basically said, Russia may not have directly hacked into machines and whatnot, but they were engaged in social media efforts to at least sow discord in the American electoral process. Then you had the bipartisan 3-year investigation of the Senate Intelligence Committee that began in 2020. They issued a comprehensive 1,300-page report, and long story short, this report, bipartisan, directly contradicts Gabbard's claim of a fabricated narrative, emphasizing the consistency of intelligence findings. Take that for what it's worth. The Durham investigation in 2023, Special Counsel John Durham investigated the origins and conduct of the FBI's Russia probe, the Crossfire Hurricane, as it's known. And while critical of certain procedural issues, Durham's findings do not support Gabbard's allegation of a treasonous conspiracy. The House Intelligence Committee report, which was in 2020 but was declassified this year, this report aligns with some of Gabbard's criticisms, but stop short of alleging a conspiracy or invalidating the narrative. So basically, if I could boil it down, Mike, see if you agree with me. Russia messed around with our elections, but not directly. They did not change votes. They did not hack into machines.
Right.
And furthermore, to be fair to all sides, there's no direct link that says Putin and the KGB or whatever directly had an agreement or directly supported President Trump.
It's right. All of that. Yeah, absolutely. All of that is true. All of those four reports that you just cited were consistent with the findings of what we call the ICA, right? The Intelligence Community Assessment, ordered by President Obama. This was ordered in December of 2016. What he's being accused of is having ordered this investigation that he should not have ordered. Okay. That was in December of 2016, right after Trump was elected president the first time. And Obama had something like a half a dozen folks and the very most senior people from the intelligence community in the Oval Office when he ordered this investigation and told them, you know, you've only got a month, make it, because, you know, this administration is leaving,
right?
Make it snappy. And the accusation is that he shouldn't have done it for a couple of different reasons. One is that it was already determined that the Russians had not changed votes through the machines, had not hacked the machines themselves and changed vote totals. Given that, he shouldn't have ordered an investigation, is the accusation. Another accusation is that apparently there was some discussion. We don't know if it was directly with the president, but there was some discussion in the administration that could you really trust the Trump administration to order a fair investigation? If you weren't certain of that and you wanted a fair investigation, again, this is putting a positive spin on it from the Obama administration. This is giving the Obama administration the benefit of that, assuming they were motivated for good reasons. If they wanted a fair investigation, then they better do it now, right? You better do it lickety-split. Well, to be fair, there's a couple of things that I think that we have to understand about the context of the situation. Number one, if the accusation is that the Russians were trying to help Trump get elected, by the way, an accusation that was borne out positively by the other four investigations, that the Kremlin did want Trump to win. Okay. If you're afraid that that might be the case, then I think it's a legitimate motivation to get that investigation done before January 20, to see if there's any there, one way or another.
Right.
And to the credit of the Obama administration, they determined, I shouldn't say the credit of the administration, to the credit of a lot of hard work coming out of the intelligence community, which, you know, people like you and I do not normally credit with great motivations and cleanliness, but giving them the benefit of the doubt in this situation, they concluded that the Russians were on Trump's side, but did not do enough either to adjust the votes directly or even to make a material difference in the outcome of the election, to be fair.
Yeah, sure.
And that's not an important. The other thing that needs to be said is that at the time, the Obama administration did not know with certainty any of that, did not know what the Russians had or had not done. They thought that they knew that, you know, there wasn't hacking into the machines. But they did not know. The president did not know, in fairness to President Obama, he did not know that there was not a wider effort. He did not know that the effort did not make a material difference. He did not know who was involved on the American side. Given what were apparently Russian motivations, these were not illegitimate questions to be asked.
Sure.
Nor were there a lot of people in that room, we now believe, who are saying, whoa, that's a stupid idea. We better not launch an investigation. That sounds like treason. Okay. Right. If you're going to commit treason, best not to have, you know, eight people in the room.
Right.
All of whom were extraordinarily powerful on a personal basis, and any one of whom could have stood up to President Obama. This was not a White House that was akin to a cult. I don't think any White House is, to be fair, which we can get into as well. There are always people around who can stand on their own two feet, which is why we hold people accountable when they behave in ways that call that into question. So the idea of ordering a wider investigation, which is to say wider than merely double checking whether or not machines had been hacked,
right,
was totally legitimate. And to your point, was something that we already knew about before last week.
Right. So when you look at it now, a lot of times you'll hear Steele dossier thrown out there, the Steele dossier and all that. That part of what Gabbard seems to be, if not directly saying, and we can talk about her in a second, but I want to just get everything out
and
on the table, is Part of what she seems to be insinuating, along with a lot of other people in President Trump's orbit, is, hey, if the whole thing got kicked off on the basis of the Steele dossier, all the investigations, all the rumors, and now it's been proven that the Steele dossier was BS, then does that de facto make the entire investigation that you just described nicely BS as well? And therefore, if they knew it was BS, it's treasonous.
That's a lot of ifs that were not in place in this case. We should unpack those ifs for educational purposes, for right. academic purposes,
right.
but they were not in place. Let's start with the beginning. The investigation was not kicked off by the Steele dossier. That's important, okay? Yeah. This investigation was kicked off by an Australian diplomat indicating to the administration that there had been contact made between Trump people and Russians. And that is what initially launched the investigation. The Steele dossier was something that we know was financed by Democrats in support of Hillary Clinton, and it was an inappropriate, indeed, fostered information that was completely made up out of whole cloth. By the way, a lot of people incorrectly believe that this is information that was created either by the Democrats themselves or by the former British agent that they had hired to put together the dossier, Mr. Steele. Neither one of those is actually true. This is a story that was completely invented by a Russian former government operative who then fed it to Steele. Whether Steele knew it was garbage at the moment or not, we can't be sure, but whatever his motivation, he got paid, right? So he passed it on to the Democrats,
right,
who were willing to buy it hook, line, and sinker. And that was the basis for certain wiretapping, including Carter Page of the Trump team, all of which was viewed without sufficient scrutiny. You know, those are wiretaps that never should have taken place. It was an investigation that should not have been furthered and accelerated by the Steele dossier. It was used inappropriately in filing for a warrant in the FISA courts. It was absolutely a jumbled mess, and there were people who should have been prosecuted but were merely reprimanded at the FBI. That's just my view. There are others who believe that the reprimands were sufficient, but it was bad FBI work. That none of that means that the subsequent investigation or the original investigation were illegitimate. To your point, if, which was not the case, if the Steele dossier was the foundation
right.
for all of this investigation, then one might argue all of that is the fruit of the poisonous tree, and therefore the subsequent evidence would not be admissible in court. However, again, that was not the case. And, however, we are not talking about merely admission in court. If the administration believed, however they bumped into the information,
right,
even if it was off of an investigation that was launched by stupid and incorrect or even illegally obtained evidence,
right,
it still has an obligation to conduct an investigation if that investigation is in the interests of the defense of the United States. Right. Even if in the long run it's going to be thrown out of court, which is completely possible because the Constitution protects Americans and indeed all residents, anyone prosecuted by the American government. If the Constitution protects people from being prosecuted using evidence that is the fruit of a poisonous tree, none of that precludes the government from taking whatever action it needs to protect us from foreign influence. That
right.
those are two very, very different things. So the Obama administration, even if you were to argue, well, you know, they believed stupid things that they should have known were untrue because they were based on the Steele dossier, that would merely suggest that they were bad at their job, not
right.
that they were motivated by treasonous ethics. That's not what we're talking about here. indeed, John Brennan, former CIA director, has been accused of lying under oath regarding whether or not the Steele dossier was the foundation for the investigation. And right. he said that it was not the foundation. Indeed, he said it was not used at all. Later, it was indicated that it was at least a footnote in the investigation. So now there's an argument about, you know, what is material and, you know, what right. was foundational, yada, yada, yada. Okay. That's not an unimportant debate, but it is not a debate that should represent the fulcrum on which would hinge a criminal prosecution. If Brennan believed one thing or not, it doesn't really rise to the level of a criminal prosecution for having lied under oath. He did believe that it was not foundational to the investigation, and whether he was right or wrong about that, the truth of the matter is that that investigation would have gone forward even without the Steele dossier. So in a sense, not only was it immaterial to the question being investigated by Congress, for which the hearing had been held in the first place, but there was not sufficient intent or even motivation on his part to lie about. What are they accusing him of lying to cover up, right?
Right.
You know, I guess you could say he was lying to cover up the fact that he was a doofus and was suckered by the Steele dossier, but that's not the same thing as accusing someone of lying about something to, you know, save his skin, for example, or to mislead Congress.
Right. And again, and the reason I'm going to reemphasize this and bring it together to our next piece of the conversation is very specifically, Tulsi Gabbard, a lot of, I think Bondi as well, a lot of these orbital President Trump and President Trump himself today. He retweeted on his Truth Social, a platform of a meme that said, arrest Obama for treason today or something to that effect. So the president himself is now putting out to his base, treason, treason, treason. And Mike, talk to me now very specifically about Tulsi Gabbard, about the use of the word treason, because I have my own theories, but I want to hear you say. One is, when she was nominated for the post for DNI, you and I both said, look, we like Tulsi heading into this thing. We thought she would, you know, but we both said, she's a soldier. She's not a spy. She hasn't worked in this community. And at the time, I don't remember if you said it, but I'll take it on myself. I said, is she ripe for manipulation by, quote, the deep state? I know MAGA doesn't want to hear that they may be involved with the deep state. But is it possible that she's being manipulated either factually or politically into arriving at these conclusions and being very public about them? What do you think?
You're the one who expressed more concern than I did, to be fair.
Yes.
I'm the one who said, you know, sitting congressman, unlikely she's going to get pushed around by some doofus. Now, she is a bit of a fish out of water in the sense that she hasn't worked in intelligence before, but she has worked with intelligence itself. She's familiar with briefings in both directions. So it's not like, you know, she had to learn French. You know, it was something that she had a strong familiarity. Having said that, I believe that she is being manipulated. I would not guess that she's being manipulated by the deep state. I think it's the opposite. Mm. Let me offer the opposite theory,
okay.
is that I think that she's being manipulated by those who hate the deep state. Mm. I don't think the deep state, which is, let's make sure that we define terms. By the deep state, I think we mean the quadrillion civil servants who don't give a rat's ass about the political people sitting on top. They make up their own mind what their motivation should be, what their priorities are, what their objectives are. They have their own sense of what's in America's interest, and they're willing to execute on that. even rising to the level of violating the law from time to time. And I would argue, going back to 1963, taking matters into their own hands with regard to the disposition of a political figure.
The apolitical permanent bureaucracy. Let's not, I
the
mean, if you want.
Apolitical permanent bureaucracy. Yeah. Okay. That's who we're talking about, the deep state. I do not believe the deep state came up with the idea of suggesting that President Obama committed treason. And the reason for that is because I just think it's too dumb. I just think it's too dumb. The deep state operates either like technocrats, meaning, you know, we're going to dot our I's and cross our T's and we're going to take someone to jail over something, you know, that no one would be prosecuted for, but we hate them. So we're going to blow it out of proportion. No, that's clearly not what's happening here.
Okay.
Alternatively, the deep state would just not even make a case, right? But just operate behind the scenes, cloak and dagger, take care of business, as we say in the literature, through extrajudicial means, okay? And I'm not going to do my John Gotti impersonation, but you get the idea.
Sure.
And I don't see either one of those at play here. I just think it's too dumb. I think that she's being manipulated by political actors. Mm. I think that she is being manipulated by political actors in her own employment and by the White House, even if not explicitly. Remember that she had her ass handed to her some weeks ago when she made an indication about the interpretation of intelligence in an international setting.
Right.
And President Trump just said publicly, no, she's wrong. Based on just him wishing it were so, by the way. Right. So I think that she learned that if you want to stay on Trump's good side, you have to say things that he wants to hear. That doesn't make him terribly different from most other humans, except that his job and her job are very different from those of most humans,
right?
And we want to hold them to higher standards. But she did learn that you need to say things that the boss wants to hear, or you're going to get slapped down. And there are plenty of folks who make the accusation that this is the week to do it, because President Trump is under a lot of fire regarding the Epstein files. Personally, I don't think it's all that linked to that motivation, because I think that Tulsi's revelation required more lead time than that. I think she's been working on this for weeks and probably months. And I just think that it's absolutely dopey.
Right.
Republican attorneys are not backing up this idea that President Obama was engaged in some cabal in the Oval Office. It's just, it's dumb. It's absolutely dumb. Not only is it dumb from a legal standpoint, it's dumb from a PR standpoint, in the sense that, as you just made the point, this is all information that we've had in the past anyway.
Right.
So if anything, the new documents bear out that the investigation was legitimate.
All four of them. But here's and maybe I'm too conspiratorial, which I'm starting to hate myself for in my old age, Mike, but let me ask you this. We've seen that sometimes the current Trump administration makes these PR plays that they know will fail. And they do so counting on, let's face it, the ignorance of the American public when it comes to certain things, right? So, for example, in saying, hey, I sent Pam Bondi over to unseal the grand jury testimony to be transparent, and an Obama-appointed judge shut her down. So you could see it's the Democrats hiding the Epstein files. When, in truth, I think you and I discussed this, it is incredibly rare in the history of jurisprudence in this country to unseal grand jury testimony.
They knew they were going to get turned down.
Exactly. But they spun it. They were prepared. They spun it properly. And they said, oh, we got us an Obama judge. We can blame Democrats. Do you think it's something similar here? Given, like you said, that the evidence, nothing new was discovered, treason is an incredibly, like you said, it's the only crime that's enumerated in the Constitution, and it's incredibly difficult. Aaron Burr was trying to foment revolution, and they couldn't get him because, as Marshall said, we couldn't find two eyewitnesses to his treason. And if you think Obama committed treason in some general way, you still haven't proven which enemy of the United States he benefited with his treason. Like, you'd have to say, like, who benefited? And if you're saying Obama benefited, that's not treason. That's another form of illegality, even if it did occur. So do you think the Trump administration, again, will attempt to, it's been passed to the DOJ for a treasonous conspiracy, as they've been saying, because they know it's a ridiculous charge. They know it's a high bar. They know it'll go nowhere. But to their base, it's further proof that they're fighting the deep state and further proof that we don't need to look at the shiny keys that are the Epstein files while this is going on.
I think that's exactly what's going on. I think that's exactly what's going on. I think this is a relatively safe referral insofar as it is abjectly silly.
Yes.
Okay. If there was really some there, you would have to handle it with kid gloves.
You wouldn't be talking about it on the 6 o'clock news at this stage.
You wouldn't be talking about it on the 6 o'clock news. You would have contacted Pam Bondi a long time ago. And you would have handled the transfer of the information very delicately. And the next thing you would have done is go after those two witnesses. Where am I going to get to? Well, that means you would have deposed everyone who was in the room,
right?
You would have deposed enough people until you could work your way up and come up with enough material that you could subpoena President Obama. That's how you would handle this. The fact that it was not handled that way, now we'll see. Maybe DOJ will handle it that way, or at least attempt to do so. In which case, you know, that might at least give the fig leaf that the Department of Justice thinks that there's some there. But I really believe that the DNI does not believe that there is any there. Which brings us to what you had promised earlier, that we need to talk about Tulsi Gabbard. And you did bring her up a moment ago, and we were a little bit critical. I stood up for her a little bit when she was first appointed. I now want to eat my hat because I believe that she is getting pushed around. In fact, I would go so far as to say that the reasons I stood up for her are the very same faults that she now exhibits. I thought that a sitting congressperson would have the chutzpah to stand up, right, to the deep state. Which might be the case, but that would also give her the gravitas not to get pushed around by the administration. Remember that she's a Democrat. I thought that that would be enough not to get pushed around by a bunch of Republicans. And so I've got to eat it here a little bit. I stood up for her, and I feel like I've gotten burned a little bit.
Well, Mike, I'm not trying to brag here, but it's more just like you at least, you know, we make assessments on people's character all the time, and occasionally people surprise us, both in the good and the bad sense, right? So we have to own up to that and say, I made a mistake, that's fine, or I had a lapse of judgment, or I didn't see things clear, whatever the case may be. And I think you just indicated that. Now, when we have Tulsi involved here, clearly this is a political thing. And because there's a political component here, it's not hard to find somebody at DOJ who will be like, I'll do what the president wants, or at least I think I'll do what the president wants. So it may actually be the case that this gets referred and some sort of weird indictment tries to take place. I don't think it'll go anywhere other than to cause political distraction. Speaking of which, in the last 24 hours, we've had two political distractions here, both pro and con for the president. Let's start out with the one that you and I were furiously texting over late last night, because both of us were stunned when we heard these words come out of the president's mouth. And basically, what this was is that President Trump, being questioned, I believe, on Air Force One by the pool reporters, which, let me stress, these are generally reporters favorable to the president because he's weeded out the people who are giving him grief, rightly or wrongly. Basically, he said, yeah, I knew Virginia Giuffre. Is that how you pronounce the lady's last name, Giuffre? She was working for me at Mar-a-Lago, at the Mar-a-Lago Spa, the greatest spa in the world, by the way. As many people have told President Trump, it's the greatest spa in the world. Virginia Giuffre was approximately 15 or 16 at the time. And he said, hey, I'll show you how much I had nothing to do with Epstein. He took, and that's the word he used, he took.
Stole
and took many workers from the Mar-a-Lago spa, including Virginia Giuffre. And I said to him, Jeffrey, you got to stop. And he didn't stop. So then he goes, I kicked him out. I said, get out of here. And people on the MAGA side are applauding. See, that proves that he had nothing to do with Jeffrey Epstein. But the question you and I had is, A, first of all, is there anybody on his team that'll tell the president to keep his mouth shut about this? Because that's not something you should be saying out loud. And B, Mike, you tell me, is this the win the president thinks it is from a PR perspective?
It is a colossal, unforced error. It is a deep loss. It is one that is going to cost him mightily over the next few months. Mm. It is also going to present legal problems for him, because what it proves is not that he had nothing to do with Epstein. What it proves is that he had a great deal to do with Epstein. Consider not only that he knew Virginia Giuffre,
which previously he claimed he did not, correct?
It depends on how you look at it. You know, initially he said he didn't. She, of course, said she worked there. Yesterday on the airplane, when it first came up, he said, oh, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. That's the wrong answer. Of all the answers you could have made, that is not the right answer. Right. You do not forget the name of a woman who had been as a child under your employ, who, with your knowledge, was hired away by a guy who was ostensibly in the business of providing financial services, whom you later learned was sexually abused for 2 years under that guy's employ, who decades later, all indications are because of the abuse that she suffered at the hands of this guy, took her own life and did so only a few months ago. We're talking about April of 2025, she died. Hmm. You do not forget that person's name. You don't. Right. You could be the worst human on the planet, and you couldn't force yourself to forget either that person's name or that person's story, especially to the extent to which it intersected with your own story. There is no way that the president's response to that question yesterday can be viewed as anything other than dishonest. Why? I don't know. I suppose it's because of, you know, embarrassment. And as long as we're on this roll, let me be clear regarding what it is about which I believe he should be embarrassed. I don't know whether it is what he would say is that about which he should be embarrassed. But,
sure,
you know, you and I have children, and when you have children, your life changes, and not because of what it is that you do with your life. Yeah, that changes a lot, right?
Right, right.
But the way that you view the world changes. Absolutely. Let me give you an example. When you have a daughter, I have a grown daughter. something happens in your brain that forces you to go from looking inward at women to looking outward at the men looking at your women.
Right.
I don't have a good explanation. I mean, it happens in your brain, though. It's not because you decided. It's not because you read a book and you sat down and you decided from now on, these are going to be my concerns. It just happens in your brain.
Right.
And it happens not only regarding your own daughter, it happens regarding everybody's daughter.
For normal people.
For normal people.
You're
right?
Absolutely right. Yes.
And I have discussed this when my daughter was in high school. I discussed this with the other dads because I noticed I caught one of the guys looking outward. You know, we're at a volleyball game and this guy is giving the stink eye to the young men hanging around. Right.
Right.
And I'm like, I know, you know, what's up with those fellas? Right. And he's like, you know, nothing. I can't help it. You know, when the girls are here playing ball, you know, the hair stands up in the back. I'm like, I noticed that. And like, why do we do that now? Like, it's biological. Like, all of a sudden you become protective. It's just something that happens. Now, if you've got a 16-year-old in your employment, first of all, what the hell are you doing employing a 16-year-old in the locker room of a spa? That's a bad idea. But, you know, undoubtedly she was hired by someone who was hired by Trump. Okay, so let's set that aside for just a moment. If you find out that a 16-year-old who had been a locker room spa attendant has been hired by a guy in the financial services business, you're going to ask what? You're going to ask what? Ask what? Ask what? Ask nothing? No. That's not an option. You do not get to say, oh, I forgot to ask him what the... What? You and I know each other to have certain characteristics, and we would still ask each other. You know, oh, I couldn't help noticing you hired my 16-year-old intern. How
several.
Come?
Several, by the way.
Several. You know, and, you know, well, good luck, you know, John, you know, good luck with that. You know, take care of him, do right by him. Or imagine you're not an ethical person and you don't really give a rat's ass about the 16-year-olds that your buddy is hiring. Let's say that part of your brain just got eroded, you know, by battery acid you drank as a child and you just have no interest in their well-being whatsoever. You're telling me that is one guy in the business of real estate and another guy in the business of financial services, you're not the least bit curious why he's hiring young women from your spa?
You're absolutely right. And I don't, just on that point, forget the extra stuff, right? Forget the accusations, but just that alone. If I have a spa, and according to President Trump, he emphasized, he stole several people from the spa. Why is someone collecting 16-year-olds from your spot? To your point, what are they doing there? But let's assume, again, he had nothing to do with that. Some hiring manager did it. Wouldn't you at least say, yo, Jeff, what's up with hiring, taking, stealing these teens? Can't you find your own team? At the very least, even if you had no malice in your inquiry. Mike, you and I both say, having worked on Wall Street, having worked in banks and large companies, you and I probably can remember every single one of our interns. We may not keep up with them or whatever, but if somebody were to say, oh, did you hear so-and-so, they, you know, ran into a tragedy and they ended up here and here, and both of us will pause for a second and go, even if at this advanced age, we might pause and say, wait a second, was that the kid that worked for me, who interned for me 30 years ago? And, oh my God, what happened to them, right? And I run into that all the time. Thankfully, it's usually for good things, right? Oh, so-and-so just became a CEO somewhere. And like, hey, that's the kid I helped mentor a little bit. You have a sense of pride. And if it's for something negative, you're like, to some extent, like a parent, you have a sense of failure, of disappointment, of grief if it's something tragic. And you're trying to tell me that you just brush it off like, oh, man, yeah, I don't know what happened. Yeah, he stole a – so
It's worse in this case because you know in July of 2025, you know the answer.
Yes.
Right? Now, as you and I discussed yesterday, yeah. I will reveal this, at least my side of the discussion sure. that we had yesterday. In 92, I had a whole bunch of interns because I was, you know, running this whole department in the Bush Quail campaign. And, you know, a bunch of Republican, young kids, yeah. Two interns. One went on to become chief of staff for a senator.
Very
huge, nice. By Washington standards, huge success.
Right.
Right? Not right. medium-sized success, huge success. The kind of success that brings a tear to your eye, right. literally, not just figuratively. Another one of the kids in that office was killed in 9/11 in one of the towers. A Howard Lutnick kid, right? Okay. You don't forget that. First of all, you don't need to be reminded who they are when you learn what happens to them years later. But suppose, to your point, you know, you forgot, blah, blah, blah. Life goes on, you lose touch, and then you find out later, oh, you know, you learn, you shed a tear, and you collect yourself and you move on. You do not forget that.
Correct.
You do not forget, right? You do not get asked 10 years later, much less, what are we now, 3 months later. We're only 3 months after Virginia Giuffre's death.
Yeah.
You do not forget. Inside of 3 months, what happened to this woman who had been your 16-year-old employee that you knew about back in 25 years ago, back in 2000? So when a reporter asks you, you know, did you know her? No. Oh, yeah. She was one of the persons that Giuffre stole.
It's completely dishonest. To your point, it's completely dishonest. And even if you assigned zero malevolence to the situation, it is a horrible thing to say. It's a horrible thing politically for him. I've seen the spin doctors today. Their best spin is, see, he told you he was so upset at the guy, he got rid of him. Why was he upset at the
guy? By the way, I got to jump in here.
Sure.
That's not even true.
Right.
It's not even true. Again, assign zero malevolence.
Right.
It's not true that Trump and Epstein stopped being friends in 2000. They were friends at least through 2002, probably through 2005. And it may be true that Trump was mad at him for stealing his employees. That may be.
Sure.
But it's not true that it rose to the level of we're not speaking to each other or we're not friends anymore. And to your point regarding, you know, the PR aspect of this.
Right.
How do you not know that that's the wrong answer? Right. How do you let's suppose that that's the honest answer.
Right.
How do you not know that that's
how it looks?
How it would look. Do you not know someone else with a daughter? You know, have you never met the family who is protective of their 16-year-old daughter? Have you never met an executive who cares about their employees enough to know that the right answer is not she had nothing bad to say about us? That's not the right answer.
It's a horrible look for the president.
Because the right answer has got to start with, not only was I angry then, I'm angry now. And Jeffrey Epstein was a scumbag, and he brought his scumbag nature to my doorstep, and I've got a problem with that. Because people like Virginia Giuffre deserved better.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she didn't get it from our organization, and that haunts me.
That would have been both the human and the just decent thing to say. And politically, it would have helped them out. Like, I hate to be that guy, but politically, it would have been a better answer. Or, as we kind of texted last night, just shut up about it. Just, we're not going to talk about that or whatever. But I think this Epstein file, I know several times we lament the fact that it's an issue. We lament the fact, A, that Epstein even existed, but B, that it's an issue to this day, that it hasn't been cleared up. It hasn't been put to bed in a way that gives justice out to all his victims. And I have this bad feeling, Mike, and we're going to end it on this because I'll save the next issue for next week. But I have a bad feeling this is going to continue to be politicized. We'll never get these right answers. And I think it's in trying to not make it an issue, we're going to create other issues out of this. And unfortunately, I think that's what we're going to see happening here.
I do too. And you said something yesterday that I thought was really important. You asked, does this mean, and by the this, I think you were referring to the Gabbard referral, but it almost doesn't matter what you were referring to. You said, does this mean that in effect, we're going to see just endless accusations back and forth, lawfare, right? Possibly mindless accusations. And I think the answer is yes. Yeah. I think that at least in the intermediate term, we are doomed to paddling back and forth increasingly insane accusations. I was extremely disheartened to see that President Trump forwarded that AI rendition of President Obama being arrested, not because it was stupid, partly because it was stupid, partly because it was AI. Right?
Right.
But the idea that it was so partisan, it was so blatantly, if you had forwarded an equally stupid video that was equally AI.
Right.
You know, but it wasn't partisan. You know, if he, you know, making fun of yourself or even celebrating something you had done.
Right.
Let me make up a stupid example. If when he had the one big beautiful bill passed, someone had made up an AI of him, you know, slaying the dragon, right, and wearing armor and being, you know, built like an NFL star.
Right, right.
And, you know, it was silly and it was stupid and maybe it was partisan, but it was positive. You know, I think a lot of us would say, you know, that's kind of dopey,
right.
But, you know, people do dopey things. No, the problem with this is that it suggests that such partisan behavior belittling a past president of the United States is okay, and it's not.
Yeah, it's normalizing it, which to your point, and I think the official White House accounts, just to close it up, are in on this, right? They're constantly not just repeating talking points, but like making these grandiose, you know, they've hired the social media kids and they've got, you know, and that is troubling because I think it just dumbs down our discussion and we're one step closer to full idiocracy at that point. All right, Mike, I'm going to end it here because once again, we talked a little bit too much, but I want to thank you for your comments and your insights. And for everyone out there, don't forget, you've been watching Liberty Lens right here at Grumblings Media. Join us every week for another episode. And also join us every Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time at grumblingsmedia.com. Also on YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, and X for Free For All, where we discuss issues of interest to libertarians everywhere. Until then, for my co-host, Mr. Mike Termod, I am Big John. Peace, everyone.